Welcome to this podcast from the Episcopal Diocese of Central Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Leslie Carter, and I'm pleased to be joined by three diocesan clergy today. Mary Kisner, rector of Christ Church Berwick, John Harwood, who is deacon both at Trinity Episcopal Church and Zion Evangelical Lutheran Church in Renova, and Janice Fritz, deacon at St. Andrew's Shippensburg. Today we're talking about ministry in small churches. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to start with John. In general, how would you characterize your experiences in small churches, particularly since you're working at two simultaneously?
I would have to say, by way of background, I've been a deacon at these two churches in Renova, and my experience has been absolutely thrilling. It's been gratifying for me to see the face of Christianity in small towns in ways that I could have never gotten simply from a course. I had not been to Renova until the bishop assigned me to work with Dee Calhoun, who's been the priest and pastor at those two churches. And Dee came to to her current role there after being a deacon for 19 years in the Episcopal Church. So for me, the experience has been just incredibly rewarding and challenging because I have the chance to work with a really, really experienced pastor, priest, mentor, and friend. That said, what is distinctive about the size of small churches? At Trinity, on a typical Sunday, we will have about 15 worshipers, which means that I can get to know people quite quickly. I can understand a little bit about the history of the parish through the history of these individuals. And I think that it's very possible that I'm doing things now that it would have taken me much longer if I had been in a much larger parish. Second thing is that in a small parish, there are no full-time staff. There's no church secretary. There's no choir. And so you really need to think critically about what goes into worship, into liturgy, and make that work with those resources. It's been incredibly rewarding for me.
Want to echo what John says. In my experience, I have even though I guess we're considered a small parish, we average 100 about on a Sunday. It's still considered the kind of the family size, and I would echo that. You do get to know everyone. You can't get lost. You know what other people are doing in their lives, and I think that's one of the things that makes the small parish experience so meaningful.
Likewise, I've enjoyed working in small churches and getting to know the people. Part of the challenge that I find, or I've found in the past, is sometimes your diocese or your judicatory presence, whoever it might be, decides that every parish needs to have some kind of voice on whatever the new commission or committee is. And sometimes there aren't even enough people to go around and have just, you know, like one person do each thing. And I know that at that level they sometimes get frustrated with us. But all in all, the things that people do connect with, they're passionate about, they usually do very well, and, you know, there's a good response.
Let me circle back in again and to talk really about doing ministry with two denominations in one small town. First of all, these parishes work very well together. Our custom is on months where there is a fifth Sunday that we have one service, and it rotates between the Lutheran and the Episcopal. And that is great fun. For example, at the end of this month, when Bishop Baxter visits Trinity, all of the Lutherans will be with us as well. Well, that changes your sense of worship. Second thing, in terms of joint support for community activities like the food bank, although it's hosted at Trinity, half of the people who are there the 2 days a month while we're doing that work are from not just the Lutheran Church, but from other churches in the town. You see the Christian Church working in the faces and the lives of people who are drawn together. And the denominational boundaries really are just more artificial than you might have thought.
Absolutely, and I think it shows the community that Christians can work successfully together and that it's about being out and about and helping people and not about the differences we may have in theology and so forth. And I might add, we have a real successful youth program as a result of combining with the Lutheran Church. We didn't have enough youth in our parish, and so we now combine the two, and it's just working beautifully.
My next question is from Mary. Often small churches are given to pastors or priests who are just beginning their ministry. What advice would you give those clergy?
Well, for one thing, I've lived through this particular experience because as a newly ordained priest, I was assigned to a small parish. Usually on a Sunday, there were 15 to 25 people, and it was very interesting. I really got a chance to get my feet wet in a lot of ways. One of the things, having come from a larger parish, the small church experience is going to be very different. And two, it's going to be different because small church isn't any one thing. It isn't, you can't say small church is and then all small churches are that. So there's a diversity depending on, for instance, where that church is located, if it's in a very rural area or suburban or maybe even urban or a small town, those are going to be differences. Another thing is the culture of that location is going to make that church setting different, whether it might be a farming area or coal mining or blue collar. And I think those are some of the things that, new clergy need to be aware of, is to kind of get to know the people and get to know the culture of the area and that sort of thing. What kind of recommendations would I give to a clergy person? Well, you need to make all kinds of connections. First, you have to, of course, connect with the people in your parish so that you can understand them well and understand what ways you can do ministry together, what ways you might challenge them to be able to do ministry that they may not have thought of before. Another thing is for the clergy person's own health and well-being, I would recommend that they find a mentor within their own denomination, someone they can talk over some of their ideas of ministry with. They definitely need to see and talk to other local pastors of different Christian churches. And also to remember that they're not out there by themselves, that in a lot of cases the diocese has a lot of resources that they'd be able to share with them. Recommending to church leadership how they can help a new pastor in that kind of situation, I would recommend that, again, because no two small churches are exactly alike in many respects, that there need to be a variety of resources that are available to help the pastor as they're, getting into their ministry. Resources for spirituality, for mission, financial, administrative, what happens when you notice that, the bricks in the steeple are needing to be repointed? How do you find someone to do it? So I would recommend to any new pastor that way in a small church, try to connect in as many different ways as possible.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that from our other participants?
Well, I think she really did a wonderful job of summing all that up. The only thing that's been my experience is many times small churches, because the resources in hands to do the work are few, you have, in my experience, a lot of lay independence. And so sometimes I believe a pastor needs to realize that his management style may need to be, at least in the beginning, a little more collaborative in recognition of the lay independence.
I would just chime in to say that clearly you're not going to simply send a newly ordained deacon out to do pastoring without some supervision. But I think it would be a very, very lonely world if clergy did not have someone that they could talk with very intimately about concerns, fears, frustrations. And I don't know whether that happens in all places. I don't know whether the local clericus works well or the council, the church council. But I think clergy need someone to talk with. They need sounding boards. And there are all kinds of ways of creating that, but I think it would be very tough if you didn't have that.
Right. And I'd like to turn this question around, you know, just as, you know, pastors who are beginning their ministry, there are also church leadership and indeed church members who are welcoming that new clergy person and helping mentor them along to a small extent as well. What advice would you give those church leaders when that new clergy person comes in?
Be patient. I think that goes a long way, both for the new clergy person experiencing, you know, a new call to a church like that, and the church themselves. You know, I think you have to be patient with each other, and you know, give each other the benefit of the doubt to begin with, and you know, start working together.
My next question I'll also direct to Mary. Do you think small churches have access to the kinds of tools and resources that make it possible for them to expand their efforts at evangelism?
I think they can. I think a lot of people are scared off, first of all, by the word evangelism. But there's a couple of ways of thinking about evangelism. One is, you know, it's telling your story about your own faith. And I think one of the things that I've done in the past with people is to just give them the experience of thinking about that story. Because, you know, some people will say, yes, I was born into this church and I was raised in this church and I've always been here and that's the way it is. Well, but when the rubber hits the road, you know, where is God in your life? And, you know, I think just, first of all, helping people to think about those stories, think about maybe critical times in the life of the small church itself when people really knew that they pulled through because of their faith and because they somehow perceived that God was, you know, active and kind of messing around and really, you know, pulling them together. So I think that there are resources. There, of course, are ever so many different kinds of books and programs that you can do. But I think just talking about the story, you know, about your individual stories, about your story as a church, is a very simple way to begin to think about evangelism and then to encourage people to be able to share that story in different ways with the people that they meet. Give them, you know, to give them resources to do that, because in one manner of speaking, evangelism is one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. So, you know, however you can help people understand how to do that, I think is good.
Anyone who has access to the web today has an almost boundless set of tools or potential resources at his or her fingertips. Now, it can be overwhelming trying to find something that might suit you, but if you were to spend some time, say, on the main website for the Episcopal Church in the United States, there are resources. I'm hoping that our new diocesan website will, not today, but within the next year, begin to make sort of local expertise, local success stories. I think, you know, when Jesus was attracting his first disciples, he said, come and see. And I think that that with smart uses of technology, we can make it easier for others to come and see how evangelism works in churches of different sizes, different kinds of communities. Mm-hmm. I really think that technology can democratize lots and lots of great resources in a really wonderful way.
I was just going to say, I also think it can be as simple as the phrase, each one bring one, especially we've noticed when the youth bring their friends, and of course when that balloons to the parents come. And I believe our church is so rich in its worship experience that people come and we let the service and the liturgy speak for it. You know, that's our evangelism. And there's just one other note. I just mentioned this because several times we've had folks from all different denominations at funeral services, and I think that's one thing that our faith does so well. Our liturgy is so wonderful and so wonderful with the Easter message that we have had people come up and say, oh, what a wonderful service. We've just never been, you know, to something so uplifting as this. So I think, you know, it can be as simple as letting our worship service do the talking for us.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing that comes to my mind, just, you know, thinking about it, if you're trying to get the word out just to, you know, who you are as the Episcopal, or John, you know, in your case, the Lutheran presence in that area, a lot of times small town newspapers and, you know, have kind of a hunger for like little articles and things, and sometimes just putting in the little articles about what you do and why you do it, you know, as far as liturgy is concerned, or, you know, some special thing going on with one of the ministries that's that you share. That's another thing that can easily be taken advantage of.
Yeah, I agree. Very good point.
Mm-hmm.
To John, how can shared ministry among denominations, in your especially placed to be able to answer this, in small communities, help in raising up and developing lay leadership to serve Christian mission among and within the several faith communities?
Well, I think where leadership doesn't emerge and doesn't grow unless there's work to be done. And you could look at the needs of the community like Renovo, which has suffered very significant economic losses over the last 100 years. It's been slow. Jobs are not abundant there. They were abundant 100 years ago. This is true for lots of communities in Pennsylvania. But the range of needs for social services to do all of the things that are done in large communities will simply have to be done by people, but there are fewer people to go around. There will be a disproportionate number of retirees, for example. And so you'll find, for example, in the community choir, which had a very fine concert a couple of weeks ago, well, half of the people in the Episcopal Church are also in the community choir, probably a similar percentage from the Lutheran Church. And so you have lots of people involved in community activities that come from different faith backgrounds. So people know each other in a variety of ways. I can know you from the food bank, from the community organization, from the public library. There are lots of these are interlocking, overlapping kinds of relationships. And as people grow older, there's going to be a need for new leadership. And so there are opportunities and role models. And there are some extremely smart, very capable people who are volunteers with a significant portion of their time to serve this community. And it's not always under the umbrella of the church, but I think the churches are a kind of foundation for that kind of community effort.
Another thing that kind of comes to my mind when you think of small church and leadership, and I liked your idea that, you know, unless there's some kind of work to do, you don't have leadership to come in and do it, you know. But the other thing that's interesting, too, is sometimes there's work to do, and instead of having to form a committee or put somebody in charge of it, sometimes it just sort of gets done. A couple of people say, well, let's just go ahead and do this, and they do it, and it gets done. And sometimes you don't even know who did it. But, you know, someone just steps up and there it is. So it can be surprising sometimes, too. Sometimes when you really would like to develop leadership, you just can't find people with the gifts or the gifts and the time to be able to do it. But sometimes you're pleasantly surprised when a particular need is filled without having a formal committee or structure put together to do it.
Mary, you're so right. We have an example that just happened within our church community. We have a food bank, but they did not offer produce, fresh produce. And we have a parishioner who has a farm, and it all of a sudden occurred to her that, you know what, we need to find a way to provide fresh produce for the food bank. And lo and behold, that generated, you know, a meeting with several churches in the area, and the thing has grown. It's now called Shippensburg Produce Outreach, and they partner with the food bank, and all of the churches in the, not all of them, a few are involved, and we now provide fresh produce. So it happened just as you described. It was just amazing to see.
Janice, how do vibrancy and vitality manifest themselves in small churches, do you think?
Well, I think I agree with one of the things Jason Biasi said. I listened to that podcast, and the first thing he said I can certainly relate to, and that is we seem to see welcoming, gracious hospitality when we go into small churches, and I'm not sure whether that's out of necessity. You know, we realize there are so few hands that when we do see visitors, we, you know, want to encourage them and so forth, or whether it just seems to happen naturally, I'm not sure, but it is something that I've noticed. And in addition to that, I just seem to notice that we see folks with knowledge of their own passions and gifts and skill sets. And they seem to just be generous enough to say, okay, I know this is what I can do. I know it needs to be done. And so they find a way to make it happen and to make it work. And I just seem to have noticed that in our small church. Again, I don't have a large church experience. It may also be evident there, too. But those two things seem to jump out at me.
I could comment about here at Christ Church in Berwick. I've only been here since, I've only been here about a year right now. And the thing that really impressed me coming to this church was they said, this is our outreach committee, and they started naming 10 or 12 different kinds of things throughout the year that they get involved in as an outreach committee. I mean, wow. Yeah, I was astounded. And the thing was, one of the things that they asked me in interviewing me was, can you help us find other things to do? I said, you want more to do? Okay. That's great. But I have people who are interested in helping with, you know, every one of the ministries that goes into doing the liturgy well. Like I say, the outreach committee is very active. We have a social committee that helps to put on meals and such to help fund things like the outreach committee. They're very, very vibrant and very involved and know a lot about their community and are, you know, have their footprints, you know, throughout the community. And it's just wonderful. I couldn't be in a more exciting place as far as I'm concerned.
This is a very small detail, but at Trinity we have two coffee hours every Sunday. Our service is at 9, but there's we have coffee hour before the service and after the service, and it's very clear that everyone who's active in this church knows everyone else's family, and this goes back to multi-generational stuff. There's an interconnectedness. There's a deep tie to the history of the area, and this is a source of pride. I think it's a source of vibrancy.
Janice, what can the large churches, do you think, learn from the small church experience?
Well, one of the things I think I've noticed is the small church seems to model a high percentage of lay empowerment. I guess I mentioned that before. basically because, you know, they just have to do it in order to reach out and accomplish what their desires are. So I think they're excellent models for having really a high percentage of lay empowerment. And now along with that comes obviously the problem of folks getting tapped out because you aren't two or three deep in the areas that you want to do. And so when you get tired, there isn't always someone to step in there, other than the idea of maybe changing and doing another job for a little while and then having someone step in. That's a way of you know, getting a little bit of relief. And then they also seem to model, I think, the fact that folks really feel needed. They look around and they say, you know, this needs to be done, and maybe if I don't do it, it won't get done. Whereas I think in a larger church, they may tend to feel, oh, well, I'm sure someone else, you know, has that skill and can step in and do the job. So I do think there's a sense of being needed, and it's always nice to be asked. We've noticed this in our church that sometimes people are a little timid, but if you just go out and say, hey, you know, we know you have this ability or this background, would you be willing to do this? 9 times out of 10, again, in the small church, they look around and they say, yeah, I'll do it, maybe because they feel that the numbers are, you know, are small. But those are the things that come to my mind in that area.
Another thing that comes to my mind is also reflected by John's experience, I think, and that is that smaller churches seem to have more of a connection with other Christian churches wherever they are, because in some instances, because there aren't a whole lot of people maybe in the small church, they need other people to gather together with to provide mm-hmm. certain kinds of Christian outreach and ministry in a particular area. I'm thinking again of another church that I worked at where, you know, all of the churches in the area supported a food bank. No one could do it by themselves, but together they could.
Right.
They also supported an outreach ministry for homeless people, and were able to put together a homeless shelter. And again, no one church could do that, but many of them working together could. And I think it just seems to me that in small towns and in rural areas like that, the small churches know that if they're going to have that kind of a witness, they have to work together.
Yeah, I would say that it would be, and again, I have never actually been a member of a large church. I've always chosen churches small enough where I could quickly learn everyone's name and everyone can learn my name, and that means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And certainly at both of the churches in Renova, I have a very good sense when someone is not there. And their presence there on Sunday strengthens the larger community. It matters, and I don't know how you would capture that same kind of thing in a large church where you might have 5 services.
Right, and in an interesting way, because you have 5 services, you almost have 5 small churches.
Right.
Yeah.
As folks often say when they describe the 8 o'clockers as opposed to the 10 o'clockers, sometimes they do seem to be 2 different churches.
Yeah.
So I'm sure with more services, you'd run into the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Any concluding thoughts that any of you would like to share before we wrap up?
I think that the book that we've read, the keynote speaker we're going to have, is a terrific choice. I think that the heart of the small church is truly the heart of the church.
Amen.
Amen. Well said.
Okay, I want to thank our audience for taking the time to listen today. As John mentioned, the genesis of this particular podcast is the reading of a book entitled The Gifts of the Small Church by Jason Biasi. Jason will be the keynote speaker at Diocesan Convention, which is in June at Bucknell University. I also want to thank our 3 participants for taking the time today to join us for this discussion. For more podcasts and resources from the Episcopal Diocese of Central Pennsylvania, please visit our website at www.diocesecpa.org.